The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This episode brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/podshock. Over 85,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player.
Live from the smoking rooms of the Fairford Gentlemen's Club alongside the River Thames, it's Doctor Who Podshock.
The Gallifreyan Embassy presents Doctor Who Podshock, episode 341 for those counting. Who are counting out there? 1, 2, 3, 4. There's someone out there counting. But it's episode 341. This is Louis Trapani, and joining us on this episode, as we go across this pond, that voice you just heard is Mr. Dave A.C. Cooper. Hello, Dave.
Hi, I'm the only one in the room who could say the word Thames. That's why I went first.
You know, when I see it, I say Thames because there's an A-M-E-S, and it's just, that's, you know, us Yankees here are just, I don't know. Well, thank you, Dave, for your pronunciation of Thames. At least I'm not saying Thames. I'm not doing the th. As in TH.
I could never say Roy Thin's name, you know, from the Invaders.
All right. Well, we won't ask Kyle to pronounce it, but joining us on the other side of this little pond that we call the Atlantic is Mr. Kyle Jones. Hello, Kyle.
Hey, good evening and good morning to Dave, regardless of what side the pond or the river he may be on.
And for those listening in the afternoon, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Indeed.
Glad to be back.
Good to be back. So it's been a long 3 days. We just recorded 3 days ago. And as we record this, we have yet to get any of our recordings out yet. So it's not for any lack of trying. It's just schedule-wise, it just hasn't... If we weren't recording tonight, I would be getting that episode of... not Smile, but the one before it, the pilot, out. So, but if you're listening to this, this is all old news because those episodes have already come out because we wouldn't release this episode until those other two came out anyway. So unless you're really playing with time and space and you're listening to them out of order, in that case, anything goes. So...
It's all happening at once.
It's all... Everything's all happening at once.
Knock, knock. They'll be out soon.
This is Lewis from the future. Well, it's future Lewis to the Lewis you were just listening to, at least. But it's past Lewis to you because this was recorded in your past. It's just not possible yet to listen to future recordings. Or is it? This is getting all timey-wimey now. So, speaking of the past and the future, this episode you're listening to right now is way past due. The episodes we just mentioned in this recording came out, but this one has been sitting in post-production limbo for some time now. We are reviewing Thin Ice in this episode, which is the third episode of Doctor Who of this past or current series. So, needless to say, all the current Doctor Who news, such as the Christmas special trailer and the details about it and... this little thing that really got no press whatsoever, this like little announcement about the 13th Doctor, is not talked about at all in this episode of Doctor Who Podshock because it was all recorded before all that. Fear not, though. When we reconvene, and we will talk about it, the news that I just mentioned, and we'll cap the entire series. Before going back and doing the episode reviews again. So I thank you for your patience. I wish I had a TARDIS so I could, you know, go back in time and release this episode a month or so ago. Well, on that note, let's return to the past the past, when we recorded this episode, and we talk about what was relevant at that time. So cheers from the future, Lewis. The future past, Lewis, that is. Oh, forget it. Let's get back to the episode.
Who's there? Sorry, I had to do that.
Who is there? Who is always there? Unless who's not there. When he disregards his oath, then he's not there.
True. Good one.
So in the last 3 days, thankfully, no one of note of Doctor Who has passed away, and there's been no other news or announcements, no birthdays to my knowledge. So the news segment is really a non-news segment. So we'll essentially just will kind of jump into our review. And if you haven't guessed it, since we did review it, our last episode, we reviewed Smile, and the episode before that, the pilot. This one, I'll be on thin ice if I don't say it. It's going to be a review of Thin Ice.
Yay.
Yay. So, as always, if you haven't seen it yet, you know what to do. Stop recording. Watch the episode. You know, not stop recording. Stop the playback of this recording. We're recording now. We're not going to stop recording. Stop the playback of this episode. Go and watch it. If you haven't watched it yet, what are you listening for? And then come back and we'll resume our review. Okay, welcome back.
Yeah, that took you a long time. Cool.
Well, quick watch.
We assumed that you paused and you watched and you came back. So welcome back to Doctor Who Podshock, and we are going to our review. So without any further ado.
You never said we could travel to parallel worlds.
Not a parallel world.
But that's London.
Our London. We're on the Thames. The last great frost fair, 1814. February the 4th.
Hang on. Why aren't we home? What is this?
I told you, you don't steer the TARDIS. You reason with it.
How?
Unsuccessfully most of the time. She's a bad girl, this one. Always looking for trouble. Last day before the thaw. Thought I'd better find a more reliable parking spot.
Wait, you want to go out there?
You don't.
It's 1814. Melanin.
Yes?
Slavery is still totally a thing.
Yes, it is.
It might be, like, dangerous out there.
Definitely dangerous.
So how do we stay out of trouble?
Well, I'm not the right person to ask.
Okay, well, when you go somewhere dangerous, what do you take?
First door on the left, second right, under the stairs, past the bins, fifth door on the left.
What's there?
The wardrobe. Pick a dress.
So the TARDIS has dresses? And that's a bit of trouble. Yeah, I think I'm low-key in love with her.
Me too.
Ah, so, and as always, even though we warned you ahead, we have to play this.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. Again. Spoilers.
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 All right, so...
See, I figured something out just then. You're not doing that for all the listeners who are... You're doing that for me so that I can hear River Song.
Of
That's
course.
What it is.
Yes. You uncovered my game, yes. I know you would be disappointed if I didn't play it.
Cool. Thank you.
You're welcome. We have to, you know, a good army runs on their stomach. And this is fuel for our co-hosts, and especially when your co-host's name is Kyle Jones. So,
yes. Spoilers.
Spoilers. So, yeah, this picks up immediately after our last episode, which was Smile. You know, we spoke about that in our review, you know, where this kind of introduces the next episode, sort of reminiscence to old Doctor Who or Doctor Who of old, where they did that on a regular basis. So I kind of like that they're doing it here as well. You know, I kind of got tired of the whole thing about, you know, which happened a lot with Clara, was with the Doctor would go off and have to come back to pick up Clara every time, you know, at the start of every new adventure. So I sort of like the way so far things are, even though they're sort of anchored at the university, so far things are flowing nicely so far in this series, even though they are still going back to the university, because the Doctor has this oath and this vault there that he's supposed to be guarding, and once again that comes into play part of this episode as well.
Yeah, that works as a great constraint, really. I mean, it works, as you say, in the favour of how the progression of the stories are going, because he's got Nardole there keeping a close eye on him, Mum, mm-hmm. as he's been called. And so it works really well for that.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, this is the first time, and I'm sitting here thinking while you guys were talking, especially, Lewis, when you were describing what was going on and how, you know, they used to do it and versus the Clara and all that. And, you know, it really does feel, and I think Nordahl plays a big role in that, it does feel like from the pilot to the second episode, Smiled, and now into this, it just seems like this one big stream of action that's just flowed, you know, effortlessly from one to second to third.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it has a nice flow to it. So this is Thin Ice. It's, once again, Peter Capaldi's back as the 12th Doctor, Pearl Mackey as Bill Potts, and as you just mentioned, Nordahl is back, Matt Lucas playing Nordahl. It's directed by Bill Anderson and written by Sarah Dollard. And this is the third episode of the 10th series. I was tempted to say season series, and it's of the 2017 series, if you will. Okay, we are at the Forest Freya in London in 1814. You know, so as we suspected, in you know, when we spoke last time, you know, the TARDIS kind of sort of brings them to where they need to go. It's the Doctor doesn't have full control over it, and that's a consistent thread throughout the series, going back to the beginning. So, and you know, and once again, we have a new companion, so this is a chance for the Doctor to sort of like get that all out to the public again and sort of introduce the ongoing things that longtime fans will know. But it's sort of this season seems to be reintroducing Doctor Who to the audience in many ways with the new companion. And I think if they're doing it in a way that's not heavy handed, and I think it's flowing very nicely. It was, you know, since there are in 1814, the Doctor does instruct Bill to go and change, and they're in the proper attire. So it was good to see the Doctor once again donning Edwardian clothes, you know. So I thought the Doctor seemed very fitting. You know, he was out of his usual attire, and now he's fitting more into that Edwardian look, which goes back to the very first Doctor, really.
But there was a slight, well, perhaps I'm straining to catch little nuances here and there that may or not be there. But when she, Bill said, "Oh, I'm happy with dresses," the Doctor said, "And I'm happy too." And it wasn't so much the words, but he had a little faint little smile on his face as though, "Yeah, I've worn a few of them myself." Now, whether possible. He meant, whether that is another hint, you know, about that Time Lords can or do regenerate into a different sex at some time and point, or have the option to do so. It seems to be hinting there that the dresses aren't just for companions.
Well, I do remember an episode where the Third Doctor was in drag. He was
right. I remember that.
I think it was like a cleaning person. You know, it was a part of the like the cleaning staff, a window cleaner, or I don't know.
Yeah. And of course, the Fourth Doctor, we had that bizarre scene where he was trying on all the Viking.
Yeah, yeah, from the jester to the Viking, yeah.
So,
but yeah, no, it was good.
So, yeah, so at first, Bill thinks they're in a parallel world until, you know, the doctor explains that they're actually they're on the River Thames.
He says our London as well. He doesn't say your London. He says our London,
yeah,
which I thought was strange.
Well, I guess it's sort of a vague reference to Pete's world, you know, and the other, you know, because, you know, we have been to a parallel Earth before. And, you know, so and speaking of the Third Doctor, it goes back to the Third Doctor where Inferno, there was a parallel world.
And I'm warning to not speculate, but I'm just going to make a statement with no speculation. But I wonder, there are no chances or no offhand comments in Doctor Who or anything they say in there. So, parallel worlds, I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, I'm sure one of the episodes will take place.
Wow. Kyle, wow, that was heavy.
it might be an alternate world where
I followed his thought process there. I wasn't even thinking that until right now. Anything's possible. And like Kyle says, sometimes breadcrumbs are left there, and whether we are reading breadcrumbs or not, or we'll find out. All right, so Kyle was like saying before we were recording that, you know, he was tired. He may not be up on his game, but I think he drank, that caffeine really
exactly hit. Like arterial flow is just kind of like, you know, I thought it was wearing a bit thin, but all of a sudden it just started, whoosh, regenerating a little bit.
All right, well, I'm glad it's working.
Better luck next time, miss.
And you're sure this isn't cow brains or sheep eyes?
Well, I've caught the fish myself, miss. Made it right here in the old ears of the eight. What are you about?
Do that again. Toss the coin.
You pay me another and I will.
Forget about the pie. I don't want a pie. I just want to see how you cheated.
Cheated?
Long time.
Don't look at me like that. I'm saying you're a very good con man.
A what?
A trickster. A swindler. See, I'm a bit of a thief myself. You know, I bet you that I could steal anything from your shop.
Get out!
Oh. In theory, I could steal anything. In theory.
Doctor.
Honestly, there's some people. More pie?
Are there side effects to time travel? Like physical symptoms?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes you see lights under the ice.
Okay, so you've seen the lights?
Of course.
Well, why don't you say something?
Well, you're enjoying yourself. I assume we get to work eventually.
And, of course, last week we had Mr. Fantastic get a mention. Now we get the Trickster get a mention.
Well,
I think there's some science fiction fan writing this.
He is the master of all thieves, since he did steal the TARDIS, and that was a revelation he made to Bill. Was it? I think it was last week, or was it the pilot? No, I think it was last week.
No, it was last week.
So I like that playful banter that he and Bill, you know, they it's not the first time that they had that. So it's again, I sort of like this chemistry that has developed. But then, you know, things get serious shortly after that, you know. We didn't mention, you know, at the very beginning, Bill makes a mention, that because it's 1814, that, you know, slavery is still a thing. And, this episode kind of faces that along with racism and, it hits on it right in the jaw, if you like.
Education as well, isn't it? History. Getting people to check this out.
And speaking of history, yes, Bill is concerned about changing history. And, it's a reference to the butterfly effect, you know, where if you go back and the butterfly, this theory about the butterfly wings, one thing leads like if you would go back and kill a butterfly, the force of the butterfly wings, you know, created a chain reaction that affected one thing that affected another thing, and just by destroying that butterfly, then it changed the whole course of history because of all those chain of events didn't happen. So, if I remember correctly, it's been a while, but I think that's what that goes back to.
And, you know, one thing that I kind of regret, especially about this season, but, you know, even back into Series 8, Series 9, I wish we would have had more of Pete. I just wish he would have been in more of the episodes, but we didn't really, you know, get a lot of Pete in there. And I think that was really, you know, I think we would have liked seeing Pete a lot more, but unfortunately we just didn't get to see him.
You mean Pete's from Pete's World?
No, Pete. Remember the companion, Pete.
The companion Pete?
See, exactly. You know, the butterfly effect.
Ah, there you go.
Got you.
Because I had just mentioned Pete's World before, so I was like, oh, that Pete. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I said he's going to at some point in here start talking about the butterfly effect, because I almost said it then, and then I said no, I'm going to wait and see if he says
Kyle
the butterfly.
Kyle thought effect. He was going to be out of it. He's not going to be with the flow tonight, and he is right on target. He is. I'm going to hand the show off to I'm going to let Kyle do the show, but he's going full thrusters today. All right, no, this is all good. Yeah.
That was funny.
But I mean, really, the Mill Companions had a great introduction, and it's been a two-way thing with the two of them. The Doctor is sort of revealing little aspects of, you know, how his life progresses and how things happen. She's sort of testing him in one or two things. But the amazing thing is, this companion has been given these sort of three. Well, I'm assuming as we move forward through the series, the storyline's going to take more centre stage, and maybe Nord will come back in, and the referred to, obliquely referred to threat that's in the basement will come more of a maybe towards the climax of the series, the middle of the series. But in one way, this companion hasn't actually needed this time, because she settled in so remarkably well, even though I think all of us didn't really want a contemporaneous, you know, human companion. Billy's just got enough out of kilter, a little bit of oddballness to her. I think Darth was saying that like this outfit that she's chosen here is not really right for the part of London they're in. But then again, when she's in modern-day England, she's not wearing what I would consider to be modern-day clothes, unless the 80s is the big thing nowadays with kids' clothes.
You know, when we first saw that first preview clip of her, you know, we were all assuming that maybe she was from the 80s, because she did have that 80s look, you know, with the denim jacket and the patches and big hair and all that. It was very reminiscent of 80s fashion.
Oh, yeah, I've seen your pictures of you from the 80s.
I had it. I had it all. I say that coming from that decade, yes. I got
like
pictures. I'll share them.
There you go.
Going to the clubs with your lightsaber, I know, meeting all these stars, yeah.
So, what was it? So, all right, yeah. So, this was the Force Frere, the Frost Fair in London. So the river had frozen up, and I guess this was a somewhat regular, maybe irregular occurrence. And they would have these they would celebrate on the ice. You know, the ice was thick enough at that time to that they could do something like that.
Yeah, it's called a little ice age period. I mean, it's from. It's happened more than once, but 24 winters in which the Thames was recorded to have frozen over. So, you know, but they were in earlier times, 1400s, then the 1600s, then the 1700s, and this was towards the end, all related to sunspot activity, or should I say lack of sunspot activity. This, of course, was pre-industrial, so
yeah.
There's no suggestion that human, you know, it was the push. In actual fact, we perhaps complain global warming, I've just thought, on these bricks. God heavens. There you go.
So tell me this, guys, did either of you get a feeling of the Sixth Doctor? And I'm not talking about Ian, but the Sixth Doctor, Colin Baker, did you get a feeling of him a little bit in that scene when they're out on the ice and with the sonic screwdriver? I just kind of felt Sixth Doctor right there.
You're more concerned for his sonic screwdriver than the poor kid, you mean, or what?
Right, exactly.
I mean, in hindsight, I can see that, but at the time, it didn't come to immediately to mind, no.
There was definitely a sense, a little bit of that, where Perry would question the Sixth Doctor over, are you for real? And there was a little bit of that. There's also a lot in this story that is reminiscent of The Empty Child, isn't it? We're back to London urchins and other things happening. Let's give some credit to Ian. He's not here, so I won't embarrass him, but I can say it. He was saying that, they've stripped back, they're playing back a lot of the convoluted nature of Doctor Who here. We've gone back to, a more, not simplistic, but going back to the sort of base core fan base of Doctor Who, and this is means that these sort of things that Billy's asking the Doctor of, although having done before, there's just enough of a difference for it, and I've heard certainly a lot of people talk about even Mike Randall Thor, one of our fans who stepped away from Doctor Who for virtually the whole of last season because he couldn't abide the direction that Stephen Moffat was taking him. He was saying that, as Stephen Moffat found his mojo just as he was about to go. But I think it's just the fact that, like the constraint of the Doctor being here, not quite as constrained as the Third Doctor, being marooned on Earth, but a similar loose framework to the storyline, that actually that releases him. He's not having to sort of spend 60% of the time on the scripts seeing that he hasn't contradicted himself here, there and everywhere, because there isn't this sort of overarching plot that we're detecting yet, other than probably, some sort of climax that's building in the background with this device. But we've got this, between the kettle going on and the kettle boiled, all of space and time's out there, as the Doctor quotes.
So here's my here's my thought on what you just said, and or to piggyback off of what you just said. As far as Peter Capaldi and the 12th Doctor, for me, this is almost, I want to say, tragic in a sense of the season or the series of which he is leaving. I think Moffat has finally crafted a story that is, in my opinion, appropriate for the 12th Doctor, because in three episodes compared to, 23, 26, however many before that, I have absolutely just changed, 180 degrees how I like the 12th Doctor. I mean, I don't want him to leave now. I mean, I'm enjoying him.
Yeah.
And I think that's tragic in the sense of he's leaving and fans can finally see Capaldi at what I think Capaldi could have been for three seasons. And I just think that's a little sad that it was written, and, you know, not that he performed it poorly. It's that he was not given, and I've heard, you know, comments on and off over the last, you know, couple of years that, you know, it would be nice if he were given better scripts and better stories. And seeing him perform just in these three compared to you know, the stories of the last 2 years or 3 years, however, I just found, you know, find that tragic that he wasn't given a better opportunity.
Well, I said that with the when we reviewed the pilot, I felt the same thing. I think this season so far is Doctor Who's gone back to basics. You know, I said even last week's recording that it seemed that we're back to that familiar motif, you know, where we have the introduction story, the episode like Rose, and then we go off into the future, and then we're back into the past, and that pattern that we saw Russell T. Davies is coming back, and we're back to basics. The pilot was, in a sense, a pilot as well. It was reintroduced in the series to new people, it seems, and with a new companion, she's learning who the Doctor is, so in a sense, the audience is as well, and I just feel that now Doctor Who's back, the story's a little bit simpler, but we're back to basics, and you know, and I think it's a nice fitting, you know, I think now the Doctor, Peter Piccolo, the 12th Doctor, can now really, you know, sink his teeth into the role of the Doctor and get comfortable with it. And now, unfortunately, just as he's going to be hitting his stride, I think he's at his stride now. I just feel bad that this is going to be it, you know, where, and you know, there's rumors that Pearl Mackie is going to leave too with the Doctor, with Peter Capaldi. And that's unfortunate as well, if that turns out to be true.
Right. I mean, there's a lot to say about that. I mean, one of the criticisms I heard, and my only criticism about his time has been the fairy tale aspect of so many of the stories. But some people have said that, you know, the trouble is that the Doctor hasn't been the star of his own show because the companion's story is taken front and centre, leaving him as the sort of almost a Doctor's the companion to the companion, if you know what I mean. But again, the other thing is that we are not only going back to familiar faces, but we're definitely going through these same things again. But it's hard for me to think back that, you know, Doctor Who came back 12 years ago, 2005. So maybe they're doing, you know, what Disney does, you know. You have a cartoon and you put it in cinematic release, and then 7 years later there's a whole new set of kids, so you put the film back out in the theatres again. And there will be, you know, quite a lot of fans of Doctor Who that, you know, 12, 13, 14, that may only watched Doctor Who since, you know, the 11th Doctor came on board, since Bells of St. John or something like that. And for them, some of these things that we're referring to that seem, or could, if you were being harsh, be a bit of a rehash, are actually, you know, perhaps needed. And they're certainly done with great flair here. And I mean, I quite like the time element of Peter Capaldi, but there's no doubt about it. When you start having things that not only were a series arc, but one, two, three series arcs, then you enfranchise many of your listeners because they can't always make the program every week, so they missed two episodes, they're lost.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's one of the hardest things about getting a new viewer into Doctor Who is the simple fact of exactly what you just said, Dave. If you miss XYZ episode and you come in, oh, well, you can't watch this episode because, you know, there's major story point in this. You need to it should never be hard to recommend an episode for someone to watch without ruining a storyline, and as great as some of the arcs have been with Moffat, I think that is a drawback because there's so much that it spoils for you, no pun intended, if you don't watch a, you know what I'm saying, if you don't watch a certain episode in a certain order.
Well, that's why I think episodes like Blink have been so successful, because, I mean, it's a Dr. Light story for a start, but that is such a brilliantly crafted show. I know it was based on a previously written short story or a comic thing, but the point is that anybody can watch that and learn from a third person's point of view, you know, what it's all about. I mean, there have been great introductions. I mean, Rose, you've already mentioned, Smith and Jones before. But, having said that, I wouldn't want the series to continue entirely as it has done over these three episodes. I think they've really given, you know, a good thing. I mean, so many things, as you say, the parallel worlds, the Doctor's 2,000 years old, the TARDIS is so big you have to turn at the fifth door on the corridor on the left, and so many things are sort of, you know, interleaved into the story, not sort of rammed down for any other purpose. And I'm finding far more expression now in Bill's face than that. I'm just watching you here, the bit where the Doctor's just thumped Lord Sutcliffe, and she's so proud that he's defended her honour. But, yeah.
Don't break it.
What happened to the girl?
Does it matter? Boy's the one with your magic wand.
Sonic screwdriver.
How is that a screwdriver?
In a very broad sense.
Oh, well, how's it sonic?
It makes a noise. There they are.
Spider, come on! Kitty, come look. They'll catch you and have you transport you. Is that what you want? Spider! Spider, quick!
The lights. See the lights. We're here to help, and if you show me where you live, we can do that.
She's gone.
Yeah, you're right. Very sixth doctor, and I must admit, I'm a bit naughty myself, because part of us was watching the plight of the young child, but I'm thinking, oh, that's a good close-up of the sonic screwdriver. I can really see what he looks like now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to make you feel better, and maybe I have a little bit more of the Sixth Doctor in me than I realized, but the whole part of that, I was thinking, okay, do not lose the screwdriver, because I don't want to see the shades.
Oh. I forgot about the shades.
Yeah, I was not worrying about the poor kid. I was thinking, okay, get the screwdriver.
Yeah, I forgot about the shades.
Of course, if it had grabbed the lad's arm, he could have got both. But I suppose by then the child would have probably, stopped breathing anyway, even if he pulled him out.
But here we see that the ice is closing in on him, because it was just the arm stuck. The body didn't get, So then we see once he goes, then the ice fills up. So this is never explained in that whole, in this whole episode, how these ice holes open up and then magically close, that's not, any explanation is not given to that at all, at least.
Well, these little luminous fish, I mean, you've heard of electric eels, haven't you, from the Viking story, but these are
bioluminous fish and all that, but how, so are these fish closing the ice? Are they somehow sealing the ice, once they open it?
Well, if you notice, they swim in a circle, and that circle they swim in is about exactly the same dimension as the hole that's formed. So they're sort of laser cutting through it.
We'll have to make excuses for it, but I think there's a little hole in the story there, and as well as the ice.
So let me guess and here I go again. The story was just a little thin right there. It didn't have a lot of stuff.
A little thin there. Yes, it was cracking a bit.
Yep.
But this is where, you know, we see Bill get a little serious with the doctor, you know, where it's no longer fun and games, and the conversation continues from there.
What's wrong?
What's wrong? Seriously, what's wrong? I've never seen anyone die before.
A few hours ago, we were standing in a garden full of dead people.
It was different.
How?
They were dead already.
Morally and practically, that is not a useful distinction, unlearned.
Don't tell me what to think.
I'm your teacher. Telling you things is what I do.
Yeah. Tell me this. You've seen people die before, yeah?
Of course.
You still care?
Of course I care.
How many?
How many what?
If you care so much, tell me how many people you've seen die.
I don't know.
How many before you lost count?
I care, Bill, but I move on.
Yeah. How quickly?
It's not me you're angry with.
Have you ever killed anyone? There's a look in your eyes sometimes that makes me wonder. Have you?
There are situations when the options available are limited.
Not what I asked.
Sometimes the choice is available.
That's not what I asked!
Yes.
Moved on.
And you know what happens if I don't move on? More people die.
Yeah, Mary Gold's learned a few tricks. There's some lovely little nuances. I think an Omo and some maracas and things. But that little speech there, where she's quizzing him, was the exact opposite of, was it Hell Bent? The one where the doctor's quizzing the President and Gallifrey about in what scenarios, in some scenarios, no. In most scenarios, no. In all scenarios, the hybrid, you know what I mean? And and she's doing that back to him there. So that was a nice little mirror of that thing. But
yeah, well, I felt that Bill was, speaking of mirrors, was putting the mirror up to the doctor. So all of a sudden the doctor now has to face, you know, his own past and his own doings and explain it off in a sense, you know, where he can't let it dwell. You know, he said he didn't have the luxury of outrage and, you know.
I loved that ending right there that you just said, where he says, you know, I'm 2,000 years old. I don't have the luxury of outrage. That was good.
And also when he said, how many what? I mean, she's thinking of humans, but I mean, he, you know, sometimes it's a different alien race it's complicated, as he would say.
Yeah.
But the point was that it showed the moral fiber of the companion, which was good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, she's learning that he's not, you know, 100% human either, you know, that he's 2,000 years old. And, you know, she learned a few hours ago after the garden that he has two hearts. And so she's learning more about him. And, you know, he's there to help people, but he's also not exactly human either.
Indeed. It's not even half human, matey.
Yes.
Exactly. Thankfully. Absolutely thankfully.
I mean, moving on with the story, I mean, there's then this where he then thinks, well, you know, what are we going to do? We've got to, you know, people are dying, there's something happening. And then they get involved in this very strange way of they're suddenly trundling along with these deep sea diver type of devices. I think Rick was very sceptical of that. But the point is, I mean, in the TARDIS, if you'd gone in the TARDIS, presumably he could have worn his astronaut suit, because an astronaut suit protects you from space, but it would also protect you underwater. But I'm assuming that those are taken from, you know, the people that go down dredging the river. So
well, it also answered my question from last week, whether or not they'll still be able to communicate with each other from their biological upgrades from Smile, because they once they put those helmets on, they couldn't hear each other. So that, you know, negates that they can't, you know, talk with each other through that upgrade that they got. I guess it was only pertaining to when they were on that colony planet.
Yeah. Certainly couldn't under the water, but who's pumping the air?
Yeah, I don't know. That's another little absent factoid.
But, I mean, the reveal was great. I mean, just jumping back to Wolverine, when I first saw the close-up of the face of this creature, I went straight back to Deep Breath, the 12th Doctor's first story, and I'm thinking, it's the dinosaur down there. It's been frozen in the ice, and now the ice is melting. Not that that would be viable, but then you see a close-up of it, and it looks more like piranha or a conger eel or something like that. I mean, not in size. I mean, the teeth aspect of the front.
Yeah, but, you know, the teeth aspect of the front just reminded me a little bit of Patient Zero.
Oh.
I never thought about that until you said that when you specifically mentioned the teeth, and it was like, Patient Zero a little bit.
And that was very an elongated body, wasn't it?
Yep. Interesting.
Well, those bioluminous fish, the smaller fish, that they were reminiscent to like some sort of prehistoric fish. I remember seeing some, you know, some like illustrated work that I guess they did from you know, remains. You know, what's the word I'm looking for?
Relics. Well, I think they're still around. I think they're just classed as deep sea fish,
Because
you don't often see them because they're not caught in nets.
Deep, yeah, they're very deep in below. Yeah.
The creature in the river. Where did it come from?
Who the devil are you, people?
Where did it come from?
Nowhere. It's always been there. The secret's been passed down in the family since I don't know when, as far back as records go.
And tell me, do you also keep a record of how many it's killed?
Please. People know the ice is dangerous, yet they will insist on their festivities. That's hardly my fault.
Don't sell yourself short. This is the biggest frost fair in decades. That's down to you.
Yes?
The man holding me has a tattoo on his left hand. That's not all, is it? The circus performers. The elephant. It's all you.
I made the most of the situation. It's the first proper freeze it's caused in years.
Why? Production down, huh?
Not enough people dying.
Girl, you show the ignorance of all your kind. Without that beast, my mills would rely on coal mines. Men die in coal mines all the time.
I preferred it when you were alien.
And I was...
Well, that explains the lack of humanity. What makes you so sure that your life is worth more than those people out there on the ice? Is it the money? The accident of birth? Puts you inside the big fancy house?
I help move this country forward. I move this empire forward.
Human progress isn't measured by industry. It's measured by the value you place on a life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great speech there.
Absolutely great speech.
And right before that, of course, the doctor lectures Bill about, you know, don't go by passion, go by reason and all that. And then, of course, as soon as this character, what's his name?
Lord Saltcliffe.
Saltcliffe, yes. So as soon as he came out and saw Bill and made a remark about, you know, what's this creature doing here? Stand up, you know, to your betters or whatever, you know, I'm paraphrasing, you know, he just lost it and just gave him, you know, a sock right on the jaw.
But he got a reading, a sensor reading from his fist at the same time.
Oh, yes.
Is age deficient in iron?
Yeah, iron. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And not an alien.
Yeah. I'm not too sure about the creature, but I suppose I think Ian said, in a way, that the creature not being classed as an alien simplified the story. In other words, you'd have to start of going to its thing. I mean, we've had the Fourth Doctor story with the Loch Ness monster in it and things like that, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So, although that indeed might not have been a natural creature. But that's not the storylines that are taking a second part. By the way, the way that that London was realised, thought was very good. One of the worries I did have, even though last episode looked very lavish, I had been concerned that, you know, Doctor Who's budget may not be not cut, but not necessarily have been enlarged, you know, to keep pace with inflation. Not that inflation is going very high at the moment. I mean, most countries are on basically staying at a standstill. But I wonder whether some of the simplification was to do with, you know, costs. But there didn't look to be any cost saving on this. I mean, there were quite large vistas of people moving that all seemed to be, I mean, whether they were done as a montage or what, I don't know. But you know, the costumes, the sets, the frozen water,
the production values are all there. So, I mean, in all three episodes that we've seen so far, I think it's been very, it's been there. I think I have no complaints really with how that's been going.
Maybe they've, when I think about it, because one of the things I'd said on Podshot last time, I think was surprised in a way this series they kept the same credits, but then that's understandable if we're going to have a launch in 2018. So maybe prior to what had happened, they may have budgeted for it was due to have a new set of intros and outros. Maybe, you know, they were due to have a new TARDIS interior. That's all that's been put back to 2018, which meant to maybe less demand on the budget.
Good point.
That could go into other things.
Well, I always say Doctor Who is more, you know, for me, what always attracted me to Doctor Who was, you know, the stories and the characters, you know, and, you know, a lot of people complain about classic Doctor Who and wobbly sets and whatever. And to me, that's all a second, you know, that takes a backseat to the story and the characters. And that's what attracted to me. I can use my imagination to get over the little, you know, production values that maybe they just didn't have the budget at that time to address, you know, and, you know, a lot of it was color separation overlays and, you know, and stuff that wouldn't fly today. But at the time, it was cutting edge and it was, you know, what they could do with the budget that they had allowed it for them.
And speaking of, I don't mean to interrupt, but I have a vault that I keep hearing this knocking at that I've got to go check on. So, yes. I don't want anything to happen to the vault. So having said that, if you guys don't mind, I want to give my overall rating if I could.
Yes. Yeah.
Cool.
Please.
So I want to give it a 5 out of 5 because it is quotable. There are several times in there that I will find myself quoting this particular episode going forward. The chemistry as Bill and the Doctor, I just think it's brilliant. I think it was a very good episode. I like this episode more so than I did Smile because I can comment on the episode itself, not just the interaction between Bill and the Doctor. So for that reason, I give it 5 out of 5.
Nice.
All right, good deal. Well, gentlemen, I am off to the vault.
Thank you for your time. I know we don't want to keep you any longer because that vault door is knocking.
It's knocking. How many times I've got to go count? But with that said, guys, have a good evening. And thank everyone for listening. And I'll be back next time. See you.
Thanks, Kyle.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Oi, he's taking one of my pies. God, you think you got a nice friend here, and he's whipped off with one of the pies.
Yeah, we thought we would have the show we're almost done. So, but we were hoping that we would have it all concluded before Kyle had to run, but he had to run. So, but he'll be back next time. And yeah, with your hopefully with your pie back. Or pies for everyone.
Yeah, because just talking about the production values, I think if they dropped at all, it was probably the realisation of the actual creature itself towards the end. But thankfully, they learned a little bit of a lesson from Jaws. You know, you show as little as the attacking monster as possible, because mm-hmm. It's much more of a threat when you can't see it.
Yeah.
But it was a bit big, tiny, as the doctor names it. I've seen on our show the. But when
how do we know it's a she? They kept on saying she. Oh. And, I mean, unless the doctor saw more of the fish than we all thought, it's just as an assumption. I guess it's 50-50 chance it's a she.
Yeah. I suppose perhaps they were thinking of it as being docile before, because they realised it was actually chained down and in distress, a little bit like a whale almost. With
it had when it's freed at the end, it had like a whale song. That sound that we heard sounds like whale song.
But when they did the overhead of the EastEnders, and I mean, it was the length of the London boat race. It looks about a mile and a half long, this thing.
Because the head was, you know, we're a mile away, and that was where the head was, and where I suspect we are on the other end now. And that's when she pieces it together. and then that fellow starts explaining what these bricks can do, and then Bill goes, "No shit!" And then we hear a horse go howl. That was a nice little effect there, keeping it, you know, for the youngsters, you know.
Oh, they all know.
Oh, they all know. They know it more than we do. Yeah, interesting. And another interesting thing is the doctor is held back. He holds off doing anything until he gets an order from Bill what to do. You know, it's her planet, and it's interesting that you know, because you would think that the doctor just does whatever he wants to do, and he doesn't really wait for anyone else. But now he seems to give pause, or at least give that opportunity for Bill to be involved in the decision making, so that you know, she feels that it's, you know, she's part of it, and you know, and after all, this is her planet and her time, you know, her history. So I think that all played a part in it.
Well, they did that in Kill the Moon, didn't they? Where the doctor,
yes,
you know, said the mm-hmm. women need to decide. You know, it's your world, it's your future, and you represent humanity at the moment. But it was good. Basically, you could also say he was sharing the blame with her as well, because, I mean, she... And that goes back, you know, like to Fires of Pompeii, you know, with the companion helping, you know, press the plunger. The companion can't travel with the doctor without coming embroiled in the same moral dilemmas, and obviously from a different perspective than the doctor. And to be fair, I mean, some people didn't like Tegan as a companion, but you know, she came to that. It stopped being fun, Doctor. Yeah. And so, I mean, it does have profound effects on the companions, and if it didn't, then, I mean, we saw in the first episode, you know, the River Song photograph on his desk, and we saw his granddaughters. I mean, you know, in that case, the doctor made the decision to leave the granddaughter. But, you know, we have had times when different companions have for their own various reasons, you know, step back, you know, oh, we're at London Airport, you know.
Yeah.
But do you want to wrap up? Are there any more aspects of the stories you don't
know? Well, I'm just going to play the last clip, but someone here on the Wikipedia page, and I would give credit to, I don't know who, you know, because I know the whole point of Wikipedia is that it's multiple people placing, you know, coming together to add to it. So someone had made a point of this, and I don't know if this is just a coincidence or not, but The street children all bear the names of prior companions to the Doctor. We have Perry, as you know, the heir, as we find out later, is obviously there's a Perry Brown, you know, a companion. There's a Harry from, you know, which was Harry Sullivan. Dot, which could be either
Dorothy,
a.k.a. Ace, or Dorothea, which was Dodo Chaplet. So, I don't know if it's because you had just mentioned the what we saw in the pilot where we saw pictures of River and Susan on the desk. So, I don't know if this was, again, referring back to if this was intentional or not. You know, and then we have Bill, the name, you know, her name after, and Heather that was in
the last
pilot,
time,
which goes back to Bill Hartnell and his wife, Heather. So it could be intentional. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, the Doctor in this one does say when they first get there, you know, and he's eating that food, it's my favourite. She asks, oh, you've been here before. And, of course, it's been referred to that, he has been to the Frost Fairs before.
Mm-hmm.
With the 10th Doctor and Rose in Rise of Cybermen, Age of Steel, and the 3rd Doctor, you know, so that's the parallel world one, isn't it? But
yeah.
Where was it? It's, that's right. In The Good Man Goes to War, River Song says the 11th Doctor took us to the 1814 fair for a birthday, which is this very same one. So somewhere there's another Doctor there being serenaded by Stevie Wonder.
Hmm. Yeah. And it also says the 12th Doctor took Clara Elswell to the 1814 fair in the novel Silhouette.
Right. I suppose we ought to just mention, if we come to the end of the main story, the bookended part at the end, where, of course, Nordahl's not played much of a part in here, but what I thought was a giant casket, you see it from a longer shot, and you can actually see it looks more like a doorway with a circular or an archway shape to it.
You're talking about the vault?
Yeah, the vault. I'm talking about the end scene. You know, they've come back.
Mm-hmm.
All that adventurous, take the time for Nordahl to put the kettle on and walk up the stairs, because the Doctor says to him before, oh, I'm just taking the TARDIS upstairs. When I'm this old, 2,000 years old, I don't always want to take the stairs. That's what happens.
Has those round things which are, you know, almost akin to roundels, but not exactly.
Yeah, they look like some sort of time seal, don't they? Well,
yeah, I thought they were. I thought they might have been clocks at first, but they have no hands.
Very similar to the ones in the actual credits of the show.
Hmm. This is one last clip from the episode.
Bill, Miss Potts, I need you with me.
I
things to do, Bill. Decisions to make. What are we going to do about Tiny?
Tiny.
The creature, the Loch Ness monster, the Not So Little Mermaid. Are we just going to leave her down there?
Well, we can't set her free. She could burst up out of the water and eat 100 people right off her South Bank. She could eat half of London.
She might. It's a risk.
So what do you want to do, Bill?
We already know the answers. Why are you even asking?
I don't know the answers. Only idiots know the answers. But if your future is built on the suffering of that creature, what's your future worth? Because it can't be up to me. Your people, your planet, I serve at the pleasure of the human race. And right now, that's you. Give me an order. Not long till noon. I need an order.
So that was what I was referring to before about...
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
And only idiots have the answers. I thought that was a very fitting, you know, where if you're so... you have to realize that, you know, we don't know how anything's going to turn out. Anything can happen. And, you know, we can only hope to make the right decisions, but we don't know the answers, you know, until we do it, you know. And those that are... are full of themselves and just assume that they know the right answers and this is gonna work. You know, those are the idiots and the foolish ones.
Yeah. Did you get a reference to the sort of beast below here as well, where, you know, the city's built on the beast and the beast is being sort of in agony and tortured and the dilemma there?
That's my only real criticism to this episode is that, I just feel like, you know, as good as this is, and I really enjoy the interaction and the story that goes on between the doctor and Bill and, you know, I really do enjoy the dialogue and the writing and all that. But when it comes down to it, it just feels like I've seen this all before. You know, we've seen so many, you know, beasts that are unfairly captured and are being manipulated by either humans or non-humans and tortured or imprisoned and in various Doctor Who stories before. And I know... with a show that's been around for over 50 years, there's bound to be some, you know, retreads of storytelling. And you can forgive it for, to a certain extent, you know, like I said, I do enjoy the other aspects of the story, but the overall story, I think we've seen this all before. And so I felt it just lacked a little originality. And once again, we didn't really get into the adversary so much. It wasn't the creature that was the adversary. It was this Lord Sutcliffe, you know, and we learn a little about him and his history and how this creature has been. He didn't even capture it. So it seems like it's been captured for generations and generations of his family. So it just makes me wonder, how did they capture this, you know, with chains and all that? They must, you know, if it's in generations, it goes, you know, maybe it might have been in the 1600s or 1400s. I mean, this creature is very old, obviously. But if it's, you know, how, I mean, I just can't imagine with whatever technology they had how they did it. You know, it just makes you wonder.
Well, presumably it had come down the Thames in one of these periods and got frozen in and harnessed at that point so that when it melted it couldn't get out. Mm-hmm. And presumably, you know, the traffic in the, by the way, the Thames was a lot wider then because the embankment side, the side hadn't been put in place. I mean, the tidal shift of the Thames is a lot more now than it used to be because it was a more open
I see.
Entry and out. So it got. Now, I mean, it's happened in America and a few of the states there where the main rivers through the cities are, you know, now almost running through. They're almost like canals because they've been boxed in and closed. I think even in New York, they've done a couple of rivers where they actually changed the
shape.
Yeah. It's almost like a canal than a real river. But, it's... I think these three stories have been good. And I do think this is a better story than last week's, even though last week's was beautiful to look at and extremely well... You know, the real-world buildings and the external environment around it was so well realised, and it was a good story. I think this was a better story, and one of the best historical ones. It's better than the, going back to the Charles Dickens story from way back in the new series, where we had those sort of the witches, you know, the three witches in it, and that. I thought this was. Probably one of the best. If it wasn't an alien, are we back to the Fifth Doctor story? You know, the short two-parter, the black... I forgot the name again. I forgot it last time when I was talking about it. The one with Adric and the way in the costumes and playing cricket and...
Yeah, they did the Charleston and... I know the one I can't think of what it's called now. I know which one you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean that we're going back to that sort of a story. I think before you get to anything like that again. And that's annoying me now. Black Orchid, was it?
Black Orchid, yes, yes.
There we go. Thank goodness for that.
I used to, these used to come right off the top of my, you know, I used to know this, like, you know, and now it's just, you know, I guess it's the effects of getting older. I don't know. I use, yeah, Black Orchid, yeah.
You're a young man, Lewis. But anyway, I think if we're in a very constrained, you know, funnel of getting, you know, new people on board, and you know, when you say we've seen it all before, I mean, you know, 78% of the audience probably haven't, because 70% of the audience are under 30, are under 25. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, they were only 10 or 12 when it came back, and for them, you know, 12 years is a long time. I was a kid then. I'm dating now. I drive a car. You know, I mean, you know, that's a long time for them as well.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, but I do feel as though maybe the very end of this one marks the beginning of a more serious mood coming into it. But one of the things I will say, and I mean, Kyle mentioned about the fact that it's disappointing in a way that Capaldi is just, you know, having a little bit more free rein and enjoying it. I always thought that there was going to be a problem with this 12th Doctor, because in a way, it's the 13th Doctor, if you think of the War Doctor. But in a way, he's the first Doctor, isn't he, of a whole new cycle of regeneration. So the change in him when he became the Doctor was far more massive, and that was why we had all this navel-gazing, you know, am I a good man, and so on. That brings us back, I suppose, again to the sixth Doctor. We've got a lot of vibes. There's been vibes of the fourth Doctor, the seventh Doctor, last time with the scorch marks on what could have been Cold Street playground, but it wasn't. I feel as though if we have two more episodes like this, people will start beginning to feel all right already, we know. Now going to have an adventure, you know, where, like you say, they're really up against it, where maybe Bill is, you know, tied to some railway tracks and somebody's twirling the moustache. In fact, I thought that's what David Suchet would be doing when he came back, if not being even more prominent. But we'll see about that at some future date. And Nordal is sort of a nice linking character, I think, to show that there is some continuity. And I think his story may end before Bill's, and that may be the driving force of the whatever series arc we seem to be. If I may, I'll just give my... The acting is very, very good. Easily four, maybe even 4.5 for this one. But I still think the story is a 3. And, of course, the production values and other things, and the little asides and the little things, the little Easter eggs that we're finding all the way along, make it definitely worth watching 2 or 3 times. And I think you could argue we're almost like you know, Central Park here, that there may be less dissenting voices, so the majority of the people are being majoritarily entertained, but there were always people that would want a story that either, you know, as an absorber off in it and they hate it, you know, it's an idiot's lantern and they think that that's good, or it's something else, or it has a son with a smiley face on it. Oh, I'm picking all the bad ones here, but you know what I mean. I hope now the series can open now and get more fully developed. The groundwork has been done for a new generation of viewers. Time to take them off on some slightly more precarious stories, I feel.
Yeah, well, we'll see what's to come. So you're giving it 3 or 4 Tardis Groans?
Well, Three, four fracture. But yeah. maybe it's nudging the fours coming more to the fore, I think, now.
Yeah, I was going to give it 3.5, and I still, you know, to me, if it didn't seem like it was, because I really did enjoy it. If it didn't seem like I've seen it all before, as far as the whole creature, you know, captured and being abused and taken advantage of, that type of thing that I feel like we've seen a few times over in Doctor Who. But like you said, you know, maybe we're not the audience. We've seen, you know, every broadcast. Well, you've seen them, even episodes that don't exist anymore. So I mean, obviously it's not, I mean, but it is a family show, so it's really aimed at all ages. But yeah, there's a whole segment of that audience that hasn't seen, I mean, you know, there are colleagues of mine that I work with that are fans that have never seen anything prior to the Ninth Doctor, you know, and all that's completely clueless, or they have no knowledge of that, you know, not to say that they won't sometime will see it, but they only know from like 9 to 12, you know, and so, you know, there's that audience as well.
It's funny you say that. I mean, how many years was Star Trek? And I mean, we've had 12 years of New Who.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I'm going to give it 3.5 to 4. Four on, like you said, because I really do like the character development. I do like the dialogue. The production values are there. It's an enjoyable story. I wish maybe we, I mean, it's, and it, granted, it's, we're locked into a 45-minute episode, so we're constrained to that. So there's only so much time to develop other characters, like Sutcliffe seemed a little thin. It would be nice to get maybe a little bit more background of him and all that. But it, you know, I think for what it is, he worked. He played the part in that story that needed to be played. And it is what it is, but yeah, I mean, it's by no means did I dislike it. I really did enjoy it. I just felt that it just echoed a little bit from what we've seen already before. As far as the general concept of the story, seems like a retread. But I think everything else outshines it, and I'll bring it up to a 4. But it's somewhere between 3.5 and a 4 TARDIS groans. I would give this.
That's where I am. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, next time is, it seems from the clip, and if I will, I'll play it.
Are you looking for somewhere to live?
That's your house?
Sharing, yeah. 6 of us.
How do you get into the tower?
You don't.
What's that noise?
There's some massive mystery going on.
See you tomorrow.
The house is eating people.
The contract. It's time to pay.
So for a few years in Doctor Who, we would have each year we would have like that one story somewhere in the middle, which was the classic Doctor Who haunted house episode. And I think that's what, from what I can see in this preview, it seems like we're back on that pattern again. This is our classic Doctor Who haunted house episode.
Yeah, the last time, of course, was Night Terrors with the 11th Doctor, where they had those dolls in the house. You remember that one?
Yeah.
So it might be similar to that.
So we'll see. That will be coming up next week. And hopefully we'll get I'll get these episodes edited and out as soon as I can, so that we can get caught up, so that we're not a few weeks behind. And but if you listen to this, and we're still a few weeks behind, so I apologize for those that are listening. But they're coming, so we are recording, and they are coming. It's just tough juggling recording, scheduling, and then time for doing all the post production work. But we'll be back. Kyle had to leave early, but we thank Kyle for his participation. And you can catch Kyle on his show discussing Who, along with Lee and Clarence. Yes. And of course, Dave and Ian can be heard on the Cultum Collective every Sunday, and there you can listen to them live at talkshoe.com, and then they also have a In addition to the review, you also do a commentary.
Yeah, we've done three live shows and two. Well, we've done the third commentary, so we're up to our sixth show out already on this.
And that's also available on TalkShoe as well.
Indeed.
Okay. So we'll be back next time. And again, we want to hear your feedback on everything that we, you know, discussed here and your take on this new series. So right now our call box is down, but we'll get that up and going as soon as we get that set up again. But you can call, you can send feedback to feedback@podshock.net. So again, if you can record some audio, we will take whatever feedback, you know, we'll take text messages as well, text feedback. But of course, this is an audio podcast, so we prefer audio recordings. If you can record yourself, that would be great. And then email it to feedback@podshock.net, and so that we could play it on the show and you can be part of it as well. So until next time, cheers, everyone.
Cheers.
You have been listening to Doctor Who Podshock, presented to you by the fan-run GallifreyanMC.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This podcast is also supported by the Podshock Podcast Companion app, now in the iTunes App Store. Visit arttrap.com for more information on this and other podcasts.
What makes you so sure that your life is worth more than those people out there on the ice? Is it the money? The accident of birth? Put you inside the big fancy house?
I help move this country forward. I move this empire forward.
Human progress isn't measured by industry. It's measured by the value you place on a life.